We'll listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers. Ronnie remembers.
Way on the other side of the Hudson, deep in the bosom of suburbia, I met a young girl. She sang mighty fine. Tears on my pillow and Ave Maria.
In the history of popular music, there have been many story songs that have won our hearts. Two of the most memorable and most beloved story songs from the 70s are Taxi by Harry Chapin and the one that you're hearing in the background, Ariel by Dean Friedman. I'm sure that many of you are wondering, did Ariel really exist, or was she simply a figment of Dean's imagination? Well, we're going to find out the answer to that and much more. It's my pleasure to introduce master singer, songwriter, and storyteller, Dean Friedman. Dean, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ronnie. Good to talk to you.
It's a pleasure. And you, like me, are from New Jersey. You were born and raised in New Jersey. I was actually born in Jersey City and raised in Teaneck. You were born in Paramus, New Jersey?
Paramus, that's right. Bergen County, deep in the bosom of suburbia.
That sounds like a song. You play a lot of different instruments. You play piano, guitar, and harmonica, among others.
Yep.
Got your first guitar at the age of 9, I understand.
I did. I saved up money from my paper route, and I dragged a bag of quarters to Manny's Music on 48th Street, and I bought a guitar.
Remember who your early influences were, so to speak, in terms of people you admired in the music business?
Well, my mom is a singer, so there was always some Broadway show tune on the piano. So I grew up with a lot of music in the house. So my early influences, you know, included classical and Broadway, Leonard Bernstein, Gershwin. And then once I got my first transistor radio, you know, I was hooked on pop.
Did your mom sing professionally?
She did, yeah. She gave me one voice lesson, but I'm not sure whether I absorbed any information. She made a valiant effort. But I learned music just being in that house.
You majored in music at the City College of New York, and you had a famous teacher by the name of David Bromberg.
That's right. I've been a big fan of his for a number of years, seen him perform the Philly Folk Festival, and he came and gave a guest lecture, curiously enough, in our vocal pop music class. And I just kept playing songs for him, and finally he introduced me to the folks who became my first managers, and they took me to my first label and made a deal.
Was that Life Song Records?
That's correct.
And this was after you had, for a while, you had sold balloons, I understand, at Palisades Park at one point?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had all kinds of different jobs as a kid. I worked in the Penny Arcade at Palisades and Harry's Hamburger Joint.
I love Palisades Park, by the way, and of course, that no longer exists, and I don't even think that the Paramus Waterfall exists anymore, does it?
No, they tore that down, too, and they put up a statue of a giant turkey.
Okay, moving right along, I could ask you why they did that, but that could be another story.
Oh, well, that's because Paramus is a word, and translated from the Lenni Lenape Indian language, stands for Land of the Wild Turkey.
Oh, okay. When you talk of Paramus, your hit record, Ariel, is probably the only song, I don't know in history, but certainly the only chart record, I believe, to mention Paramus.
True enough.
You got to deal with Life Song Records. Life Song is best known for the fact that their major artist was the late Jim Croce.
That's right.
Now we get to Ariel. Actually, I was inspired to do this interview when I saw Ariel discussed on a message board. I want to just mention it's Mike Riccio's Oldies Board, www.oldiesboard.com. How did that song originate, and was it based on a true experience?
Well, I'd say it was sort of a composite of all these girlfriends I had as a teenager growing up in Jersey, and I sort of squished them together in one crush in the song.
So they all got squished together and they became one girl. We'll let people hear the long version of it. There was a certain amount of controversy. You had a line, she was a Jewish girl. For some reason, some radio stations objected?
Well, actually, that's not the case. It was the record company was afraid that stations in the South would use that as an excuse not to play it. And I, you know, argued as best I could with the first single off my first album, but I didn't have much control over it. The compromise was they had to cut it for the single anyway, and they left it intact on the album. But they were just being idiots. But what I was pleased about was that stations in the South actually insisted on playing the full-length, unedited version off the album.
The record did very well, got to number 26 nationally, and probably even more important, it stayed on the chart for 22 weeks.
Well, it was a small independent label. The record kept getting bullets and then losing them and then getting them and then losing them. It was a number one record in about 20 markets around the country, but they just didn't have the muscle to do the job nationally. But it was very exciting, and, you know, it sort of launched me into the little media stew.
I met a young girl, she sang mighty fine. Tears on my pillow and Ave Maria. Standing by the water, calling for Ramis Park. She was working for the Friends of BAI. She was collecting the waters in a paper cup. She was looking for change, and so was I. She was a Jewish girl, I fell in love with her. She wrote her number on the back of my hand. I called her up, I was all out of breath. I said, come hear me play in a rock and roll band. I took a shower and I put on my best blue jeans. I picked her up in my new VW van. She wore a peasant blouse with nothing underneath. I said, hi, she said, yeah, I guess I am. She forgot to tell me that she didn't eat me. I had a gig in the American Legion Hall. It was a dance for the volunteer ambulance corps. She was sitting in a corner against the wall. And she would smile and I melted all over the floor.
About that line or something? It's a beautiful line.
Well, you know what? It just sort of happens when you're improvising lyrics and melodies. He's sort of sometimes voice takes you places, and then it occurred to me. The fun part was actually editing all the explosives and fireworks and missiles and bombs into the chorus. We got a sound effects album, and we were dropping mortars and all kinds of munitions into the track. We didn't actually blow anything up, but someone did at some point.
You mean nobody was injured during the making of Ariel?
That's true.
I am Ronnie Allen, talking to a man who invented a game called Eat a Bug. That we'll talk about that a little bit later. Dean, you are nothing if not unusual, and you're very creative. And we're going to move to another story song of a different type. Now, Ariel did not become a big hit in England, right?
More of a turntable hit in England, not as big as it was here in the States.
But now we're going to talk about a record, Dean, that was kind of the reverse. It didn't do that much in the States, but over in England, it became a monster. I'm talking about Lucky Stars. Now, your first album contained Ariel. That was Dean Friedman, 1977. And I believe Lucky Stars is from Well Said the Rocking Chair?
That's correct.
How'd you come up with Lucky Stars?
Well, I'd been driving a taxi cab around that time and listening to a lot of country music on the radio. And at the time, there were not a lot of duets in pop music, but it had been a long-standing tradition in country music. There were all kinds of great classic duets. And in some ways, Lucky Stars was sort of my pop version of a country duet. It sort of just evolved as a dialogue. So it's kind of a little musical set piece.
Now tell me a little bit about Denise Marsa. She is the mystery lady.
That's right. And a really talented artist and singer and a songwriter in her own right. She was introduced to me by Don Palooza, who engineered my first album. He was working with her, brought her into the studio, and she sang, and you know, had this lovely voice. And when I wrote the song, I thought, all right, well, Denise could probably do a good job on this.
Was it a difficult session, or did you do it like in one or two takes?
Well, it wasn't difficult, but it was not a style she was accustomed. She was more of a rocker, a Janis Joplin vocalist with a really rough texture. So it was a little bit of a shift of gears for her to sing something that was much more ballad-like. The song, you know, it's depicting a pretty common squabble that couples have. You know, if someone sees an ex-girlfriend and there's jealousy involved. But it's also very tongue-in-cheek. It wasn't that hard to fall into character.
Okay.
My record label executives didn't even want me to put the duet on my album. I had to fight to do that. And then they decided to omit her name from the single. It's listed on the album track, but when they put out the single, she became known as the Mystery Lady.
you're dumb, but that's okay. You don't have to look so glum.
Do you still love me?
Yes, I still love you.
You mean you're not just being nice?
I'm not just being nice.
Do you feel sleepy?
Oh, you're so sincere. Yes, I feel sleepy.
We'll slide over here, cause I may not be all that bright, but I know how to hold you tight. And you can thank your lucky stars that we're not.
Very interesting record. And Dean, I was able to track down Denise, and this is what she had to say about Lucky Stars.
Well, the song is basically, for lack of a better term, it's a musical animated discussion, so to speak. You are not merely singing, but you are actually acting as well, playing the role of Dean's girlfriend.
Correct.
Or wife. I don't know. It's not really established.
No, we didn't establish my name or if we were married.
That's right. Now, your name doesn't even appear in the record.
Right, so I could actually be Denise.
Yeah, that's right. Or you could be married or just living with Dean.
Just dating him.
Was it difficult at all to get into character? You're singing and trying to sound angry at the same time?
Well, for me, I was a theater major, and I had been performing my whole life, so acting and singing went hand in hand for me. I think what was the most challenging part for me with the song,
right,
if I remember correctly, was getting my voice to be that soft and that expressive. I had a rockier style. So I remember we spent a lot of time not on the actual nuances of the way I was expressing myself vocally, but more about keeping it very soft and almost spoken. And that was the challenging part for
right.
me.
Right. Kind of a controlled anger. You aren't shouting at him.
I hammed it up a bit. I think I felt like it was such a little bit of a silly song that if I was going to, you know, step into the role, I would have to sort of take it to sort of an extreme place to make
yes.
it work. So that's just what I did. I hammed it up a bit.
When the single came out, your name was not mentioned on the label. And a lot of people were saying, who is that lady?
When it came out, one of the big issues was, who's the girl? The funny part was, people were writing in and calling Dean an egomaniac.
But it wasn't Dean's choice to do this. It was the record company's choice.
I think it was an oversight. I don't know if the label did it intentionally. The label didn't mention me.
It was obviously not Dean singing the female part on the record.
No, and I had the first official chorus, even though it's a one-line chorus, and so I'm singing half the record. I'm not sure, but it sort of fueled the interest. You know, everyone saying, who's the girl? Who's the girl? What I remember happening after the first release, they had to manufacture more records because
right.
it was a hit.
Yeah.
I believe he went to the record company and said, you know, this is absurd. Her name should be on the record. I'm asking you to put her on the next batch of singles. And I believe the second release starts saying, Dean Friedman featuring Denise Marsa.
Cool.
Lucky Stars. And Dean was counting his lucky stars that he had a huge hit in England with that record. It got to number 3, I believe, on the charts.
Yep.
Were you surprised that it was so successful over there when it didn't do that much over here?
Well, I was pleased, but I had to fight with the record company because they didn't want to put it on the album. And in fact, when I delivered the album to the record company, they sat me down and lectured me for about a half hour telling me I'd done a terrible job. And I didn't listen to anybody, and I didn't listen to my managers. And the second record, which contained Lucky Stars, was far inferior to my first album. I should have done something like the first album. And I just sat there for half an hour listening to them, you know, berate the album and tell me what a bad boy I was. Just perplexed, because I knew it was a really strong album, and there was a lot of quality stuff on it. So I walked to that meeting thinking, wow, they're nuts. They've lost their minds. And to my great delight, a few days after that meeting, a telex came to their offices saying that Lucky Stars had entered the charts, and within 2 weeks went to number 3.
The fact that it was such a big success in England, did that change your life? Did you stop driving the cab at that point?
No, because the label then sued me for breach of contract. They were kind of bullies and typical record company bullshit.
Oh, gosh. This is not necessarily an all feel-good story.
Well, no, it's a very typical music business story.
Yeah,
it happens, I would say, to 99% of the artists out there, which is that the labels and managers abuse them terribly, and some survive, and most don't.
I want to play one other track from Well Well Said the Rocking Chair, and it's called Corned Beef on Rye. That's W-R-Y.
Well, it was one of the most fun recording sessions that I ever had, because I went around with a sound guy and a little handheld recorder to every delicatessen in New York to get sound effects to layer into the song.
This is real delicatessen.
Oh, absolutely. These are authentic sounds and authentic waiters calling out, "Two orders of Kishka." Copy and rye. And we went to the Carnegie Deli, we went to Wolf's Delicatessen, you know, Second Avenue Deli. We just went all over the place getting all these great sounds. Of course, we were obliged to eat something in each deli as we were recording.
Lots of old soups, a copy, corned beef on rye, tomato and slaw on, pistol on rye with Russian, two orders of Kishka.
For a corned beef and rye with a tomato and some coleslaw on the side. I'm really glad that you tripped on the curb. We might have never met. It was a sight. You look all perturbed, helpless and sopping wet. Oh, how do you feel?
I'm fine.
I'm not quite sure what you did.
Who gets the iced tea?
Over here, please.
What do you mean?
It's very strange being with you, makes me feel like a kid. How did you like the movie we saw?
Well, it's kind of thin.
I'm so confused, there's so much to ask, I don't know where to begin.
Everybody's wondering what Dean has done since Ariel. I can mention Well Well Said the Rocking Chair was the second album that came out in 1978. Rumpled Romeo came out in 1981. Songs for Grown-Ups, 1998. Is that like R-rated songs? Is that what he
No, but I had been sort of locked out of the music business for almost 20 years.
Okay. You were no longer with Life Song Records at that point.
No. There was a big gap between the third and the fourth album. But I was determined to record again, and I never stopped being a musician. I never stopped writing songs. So when I finally got the opportunity again to get into the studio, I had a lot of material that I felt real strongly about and was real proud of. And again, at that time, I wasn't a kid anymore. I had a kid of my own. And the songs were grown-ups. I was feeling like a grown-up. You know, you mentioned story songs, and I've always written story songs, and I tend to write about what I know. So they were stories about my life. It's a double album with 28 songs. My label is Real Life Records, and I think of them as real songs about real life.
Can people go to your website and sample your songs?
Absolutely. Most of my albums are available right through my website. They can be downloaded, or you can order CDs through the website. And tickets to all my upcoming concerts in the Northeast are also available online through my website, which is, oddly enough, deanfriedman.com.
DeanFriedman.com. Following Songs for Grown-Ups, which you can sample there, we're not going to run anything from that right now. You had an album called The Treehouse Journals in 2002. Then you had something in 2005 called Squirrels in the Attic. Do the squirrels refer to political people? Is that what the reference is to squirrels there? Or?
Well, not necessarily. I tour England on a regular basis. Once a year I go over there and do a tour. And the last 7 years I've performed up at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. One prominent element of the festival is that there's a lot of comedy. And the first year I went in 2003, I was really blown away by all these really cutting-edge comedians and the great stuff they were doing. And I had always done comedy songs in my live set, and there was always one or two comedy tracks on the albums, you know, like the Daily Song. I was inspired by all these comedians at the Fringe Festival, and so I decided that when I went back the next year, I would do a whole show of just comedy songs. And that became the album, Squirrels in the Attic. The title itself sort of alludes in my mind to when you're hearing little noises and footsteps and things going on in the attic, you're not exactly sure what's going on up there, but there's mischief, you know, afoot. So, to my mind, these songs are full of mischief.
I'd like to play one of the tracks from Squirrels in the Attic, and the one I picked out is I'm a Clone.
I'm a clone, I'm a clone, I'm a clone, I'm a clone. I'm never alone,
never alone.
There's always lots of company,
but don't you see all my siblings and me?
I'm a clone,
I'm a clone,
I'm a clone,
I'm a clone.
In a petri dish I was grown,
petri dish I'm grown.
With all my brothers A through Z,
Ben,
Chucky,
Dave,
Ed,
Frank,
George,
Harry,
Susie,
Joe,
Carl,
Louis,
Buddy,
Otto,
Quentin,
Rob,
Vietnam,
Vladimir,
happy childhood we had. We all look just exactly like our dear old mom, maybe our dad.
I'm a clone,
I'm a clone,
I'm a clone,
I'm a clone.
Someone the boat doesn't condone,
does not condone.
The way I was conceived is blasphemy,
according to him, but not to me.
I'm a clone,
I'm a clone,
I'm a clone,
I'm a clone.
I've done nothing that I need to atone for. I've got a soul, you see.
You see.
It's unique to me. Though the thought of us may fill you with anxiety. Don't discriminate against us, don't you see?
That's no way to treat us.
We all were once a fetus.
I'm a clone.
I'm a clone.
I'm a clone.
I'm a clone.
The only family I have known.
Family I have known.
A row of testers from a single embryo. Lined up in a neat row. We all were born in vitro.
I'm a clone.
I'm a clone.
I'm a clone.
I'm a clone.
All the controversies overblown. The only part that's really hard is having to run out by hand all those birthday cards.
Well, you should see my family tree.
Everyone looks just exactly like me.
Our lineage is authentical.
We all were born identical.
I'm a clone.
I'm a clone.
I'm a clone.
I'm a clone.
I'm never alone.
Never alone.
There's always lots of company.
But don't you see all my siblings and me?
Clone.
I'm a clone.
I'm a clone.
I'm a clone.
In a petri dish I was grown.
Petri dish I'm grown.
With all my brothers A through Z.
Ben,
Chucky,
Dave,
Frank,
George,
Harry,
Susie,
Joe,
Carl,
Mike,
Otto,
Pete,
Quentin,
Rob,
Sam,
Vladimir,
Wally,
Yanni,
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 and Vicky.
This is the gentleman that was a clone, or is a clone. I'm a clone, Dean Friedman. You did the soundtrack to something called Boone.
Right, for many years a hit TV series in the UK.
We have a lot of UK people that listen to these interviews. you did something about a vampire motorcycle.
Yes, a low-budget horror film, a cinema classic in the horror genre. The title track was She Runs on Blood, Not Gasoline, about a vampire motorcycle.
We're winding down right now. Eat a Bug, by the way, was a video game that you designed.
I did, during a period of time where I was locked out of the record industry. I got very involved in multimedia and virtual reality, and I designed the first video game for national television, a game called Eat a Bug for Nickelodeon TV. And I spent a good part of the 80s and 90s designing video games and virtual reality environments for TV and for museums. You know, kept me busy and kept me off the street.
You still do that?
Help pay the rent. I still do a little bit of it, but I was always determined to get back to the music, and so that's what I spend most of my time.
To me, eating a bug is something you'd only do if you're another bug. I can't imagine a person wanting to eat a bug. Is that game still available?
It still runs in some museums around the world. It aired on Nickelodeon for a couple of years. After Eat a Bug, I did games for a show called Total Panic.
Right.
You can see all this stuff on YouTube if you type in video or Nick Arcade, or if you go straight to my website, deanfreeman.com.
We're going to close by talking about submarine races. I have to ask you, did you listen to Murray the K growing up?
You know, I did, and I was always familiar with the expression, and somehow, as I was putting together the last album, it sort of bubbled up from my subconscious.
For those that don't know what submarine races is, could you tell us?
Well, it's a euphemism that refers to a teenage couple parking their car along the Hudson River, overlooking the river. Ostensibly, they'll tell people they went to watch the submarine races.
Yeah.
You know, really went to kiss and make out. You can't really see submarine races, even if they were racing. But it's just a playful euphemism for, you know, making out in lover's lane.
I'm going to play some brief excerpts from submarine races, leading off one that I picked. It's not one that we discussed yesterday, but this one is kind of weird, and I'm going to just do a little bit of Crazy as a Loon.
I love my Aunt Sheila, but she's crazy as a loon. She lives with Uncle David and a pet raccoon. Her name's Raquel, she has her own bedroom. Would you believe they even took her on the honeymoon?
No one else could handle her support the bride and groom.
She's crazy as a loon, crazy as a loon. I love my Aunt Sheila, but she's crazy as a loon. Crazy as a loon, crazy as a loon. She's crazy as a loon. I love my Uncle Aaron, but he's crazy as a loon. He used to iron his money, hang it all around his room. He can't get anywhere on time, not day or night or noon. One day he built a rocket ship and flew it to the moon.
He was 3 days late, but that's being picky.
He's crazy as a loon, crazy as a loon. I love my Uncle Aaron, but he's crazy as a loon. Crazy as a loon, crazy as a loon. He's crazy as a loon. I love my Grandpa Howie, but he's crazy as a loon. Once he played around a golf in a typhoon. He's got a tin ear, he can barely carry a tune. But when he starts to dance, he makes all the ladies swoon.
Look out, he needs a lot of elbow room.
He's crazy as a loon, crazy as a loon. I love my Grandpa Howie, but he's crazy as a loon. Crazy as a loon, crazy as a loon.
That's a pretty crazy song. You know, crazy people like that.
Sure, everyone in my family. I mean, I do tend to write about things in my life and, you know, lives of people around me. And as peculiar as the behavior in that song is depicting in my own family, I'm very sure that everyone else's family has equally bizarre and loony relatives that will relate to the lyric.
I'm a Lucky Guy. Any quick thoughts about I'm a Lucky Guy, which is track 2 on the album?
An important survival tool is to be aware of the good things that are in your life, to appreciate what you got. And that's what the song's about. You know, even though I complain and bitch and moan about all kinds of, you know, stuff that's gone down and the record business, for example, the truth is at the end of the day, I'm blessed and I'm fortunate. I've got a beautiful family and I'm a lucky guy.
I'm a lucky guy. Got a wife just as sweet as apple pie. Well, sometimes she can be a little tart, but I cannot lie. I'm a lucky guy. I'm a lucky guy. I don't have much money and I don't know why. I work real hard and God knows I try. Even so, I'm a lucky guy. I am a lucky guy. I'm a fortunate son of a gun. might have a billion bucks, but your life's not half as fun. I'm a lucky guy. Wake up every morning, I can see the sky. The sun may not be shining now, but it will be by and by. I'm a lucky guy. Sometimes it seems I'm just barely squeaking by. And I catch a glimpse of the sweetheart out of the corner of my eye. And I know I'm a lucky guy.
Lucky stars to being a lucky guy. And maybe there'll be a third lucky song in the future. Who knows? You're a criminal, darling. You Stole My Heart is track number 3.
I wrote it for my beautiful wife, Allison, who has got a little bit of a criminal bent.
I wake up freezing cold in the middle of the night, only to discover you stole my covers. You're such a thief, girl, you know it's right. I'm not complaining, I knew the score right from the start. You're a criminal, darling, you stole my heart. You have no qualms about it, you have no doubt. You're unrepentant, but true love's transcendent. Despite your errant ways, I am devout. You say thievery is just another form of art. You're a criminal, darling, you stole my heart.
Under the Weather is number 4.
It's a song that I wrote for two people close who were grappling with really difficult times and health issues. And so it's hard to know what to say because you want to express how you feel and you're caring, but you don't want to, you know, tiptoe around really difficult issues. So I was trying to find a way to just express that, you know, that we hope everything's going to be okay.
Heard you're feeling under the weather. I really hope you're feeling much better soon. I wasn't even sure it's the weather. I ought to even bother you with this silly tune. But then I thought, hey, it doesn't matter. Either way, it'll make you feel glad, or else you'll find it so annoying. It'll help to distract you from your troubles. And all I wanna say is that we hope and pray you're gonna be okay. Just another one of life's little traumas. Gee, you look good in those pajamas. Even though I know it's not exactly what you had in mind when you said you wanted a break from the daily grind.
I highly recommend your latest album, Submarine Races. You're not living in New Jersey anymore.
I live upstate New York, the treehouse in the backyard, and I'm waiting for a spring.
Dean, I want to thank you, and I want to wish you continued success in whatever you do. You're still doing tours and stuff, still perform?
I am, and I'm always performing somewhere, either in the UK or here in the Northeast. Sometimes I'll get to the Midwest and the West Coast. Anyone interested in gig alerts and updates, just sign up to the mailing list on my website, deanfriedman.com, and I'll keep you posted.
We're going to close with the title cut of your album called Submarine Races. I wish you success with this and all of your other ventures in the future.
Thanks for having me, Ronnie. Great talking to you.
We drove my Subaru out in 95. You said it's good to be alive. We parked at sunset, just off Ocean View Drive. Watching the submarine races. Submarine races. Watching the submarine races. Submarine races.
Ronnie remembers. Well, that's the show. And now a couple of bonus tracks by Dean Friedman. From his album, Songs for Grown-Ups, here's a track that kind of shows his jazzy side. This is called Hobnobbin'.
Superman is a friend of mine. He drops by my house all the time. He's no different than me or you. He even helps start the barbecue. And when the rest of the guests get there, he grills those burgers medium rare. And I'm a hobnobbin.
Hobnobbin.
Sharing a meal with a man of steel. And I'm a hobnobbin.
Hobnobbin.
Hanging loose with a guy named Bruce. And I'm a hobnobbin.
Hobnobbin.
Hot tea with the captain DC. I'm hobnobbin with Batman and Robin. That bit in the refrigerator. None other than the Caped Crusader. The boys under the den. Playing Bob Cop Thug with the X-Men. And though I know it's not polite to point, well, there's the Joker and the Penguin and the smoking a joint. And I'm a hobnobbing.
Hobnobbing.
Making the scene with Wolverine. And I'm a hobnobbing.
Hobnobbing.
Talking trash with a flash. I'm hobnobbing.
Hobnobbing.
Getting in the swing with the thing. Hobnobbing with Batman and Robin. Dead devil, he's the man without fear. Eating jalapeno peppers with cold beer. The Green Hornet and Gecko too. But all they ever do is dog you. A Silver Surfer, he's so cool. I'm floating on his board in my swimming pool. And I'm a hobnobbing.
Hobnobbing.
Shooting the breeze with Mr. Freeze. And I'm a hobnobbing.
Hobnobbing.
Getting tight with the Dark Knight. And I'm a hobnobbing.
Hobnobbing.
Sharing a feast with a beast.
Hobnobbing with Batman and Robin.
Anytime I feel less than zero, I get together with the superheroes. Hobnobbing.
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 Wasn't too drastic. Got a helping hand from Mr. Fantastic. Someone locked the bedroom on the second floor. So he reached through the window and he opened the door. But when we walked in, we were thunderstruck. A supergirl was in the bedroom, how was it duck? And I'm a hobnobbing.
Hobnobbing.
Cruising the room with Dr. Doom. And I'm a hobnobbing.
Hobnobbing.
Sipping cider with the Ghost Rider. Hobnobbing.
Hobnobbing.
Talking up a storm with a storm.
Hobnobbing with Batman.
What have you done to Batman? Let me check that stuff all over the rug.
Hobnobbing.
Iceman, would you be so kind as to put a few cubes in my drink?
Hobnobbing.
Dr. Doom, you know, I've been thinking, yeah, I got a little pain in the left side right here.
Hobnobbing.
Lex Luthor. Nice you play.
Hobnobbing. Finally, from his album The Treehouse Journals, here's Dean doing a song called You and Me, Babe.
Look at those children, see them smiling, playing outside on the backyard swing. Where are their parents? We'd better find them. It's time for dinner and they're not listening. by the way it really puzzles me. Who are their mom and dad? Sweet Jesus, could it be you and me, babe? You and me, still together after all these years. You and me, babe. You and me, through the laughter, the laughter and the tears. Got this picture here in my wallet, next to my credit card, my photo ID. It's up to people looking happy, grinning like a couple of chimpanzees. You know they look so strangely familiar. Give me a minute now and it'll come to me. Hey, you and me, babe. You and me, still together after all these years. You and me, babe. You and me, through the laughter, the laughter and the tears. Funny how much they both remind me of a couple of young kids we used to know. They got no idea what they're in for. They've got each other and that's all they need to know. Just like you and me, babe. You and me, still together after all these years. You and me, babe. You and me, through the laughter and the tears.